Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.
That thing that you're running from, or that bad thing that happened, that thing that feels confusing or chaotic still, when you think about your story, like, just remember that Jesus is already there. He's inviting you, and sometimes using these feelings as a way to get your attention to come look at this thing, you know, come look at this thing of pain or harm or hurt and allow God to heal it.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast, where we help you lead with integrity at home, at work, and in the community.
I'm Tara Mattson, a licensed marriage and family therapist and executive coach.
And I'm Jeff Mattson, an executive coach and organizational development professional.
And together we bring you 2 decades of experience in leader development and trauma-informed therapy. We are so glad you're here to help you become the leader you would follow. Well, welcome back to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We're your hosts, Jeff and Tara Mattson, and it's so good to be with you today. We're in the middle of a series, really as part of my next book release on Untangling from Unhealthy, a Trauma-Informed Guide to Healing from Church Hurts. And we're talking about all the different aspects of church hurts and healing. So today we're going to talk about emotions, a really key aspect to finding healing, no matter our story. And when I ran across this book that we're going to be featuring today called Feel, a collection of liturgies offering hope to every complicated emotion, I immediately bought like 12 of them and I handed them out to our counseling staff, our coaches. I think I've read it in almost every wholehearted leadership cohort at some point. It's become one of my favorite gifts and I use it personally. And so today we decided to invite the author of this book to join us in this conversation around emotions.
Yeah, Anne Julie Pascal grew up as a missionary kid in San Diego County. She studied psychology at Point Loma, earned her graduate degree from Talbot Seminary in spiritual formation and soul care. Anne Julie is the founder of the Moms We Love Club. That sounds awesome. And which is a social media campaign designed to raise prayers and financial support for moms enduring long-term hardship. She's also a pastor's wife, writer, and busy mom of 5. And Julie, it's so great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's a delight to be here.
Yeah, so good. And I love the color on your wall, by the way, in the backdrop there.
Yeah.
One of my favorite colors.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything that color.
Oh, that's speaking your language
yes.
there.
All right. So let's start by just talking about your own personal journey and how it influenced you actually writing this book about Feel.
Yeah, well, I grew up in San Diego and kind of in the intro, you mentioned being a missionary's kid, which is also kind of a strange thing to be a missionary's kid in San Diego. But kind of how my family structure went was my dad grew up in Thailand and my mom grew up in India as a missionary kid. And they both met in the States and did ministry working with international students who were studying, the international students were studying in America abroad, and my parents would reach out to them. And so essentially, I was raised in a pretty Asian culture, which was very much about, especially the Thai culture. It's a little unique than other parts of Asia. But in Thailand, one of the biggest emphasis in the culture is having fun. Like they play games. They like, oh my goodness, they have a day in Thailand. You know about this? On their New Year's, instead of fireworks like we do here, they have a water fight. So for 3 days, they fill up water guns and trucks of trash cans and dump water. It's a nationwide water fight.
That is awesome.
Which is never heard
so
that.
Fun, right? So that's the kind of world I grew up in. We just had a lot of fun, which is great. But it also means we know how to do happiness and joy really well, but we don't know how to do anger and sadness and fear mm-hmm. at all. And mm-hmm. anytime those emotions came up, you just didn't deal with it. It was like, I think in my home, especially with the church culture is, there are certain emotions that are acceptable, right? Like hope, mm-hmm. Joy, gratitude. Yes, more and more of those, right? But if it's rage or if it's anxiety or if it's sadness, it's sometimes very easy to put a Christian Band-Aid on it, you know? And so that's kind of the culture and home and church I grew up in. It was probably in my mid-20s when I was in seminary and working at a church. And it was like all those Band-Aids kept falling off, right? When they're almost so bloody. Have you ever had a Band-Aid? And it just keeps kind of, it can't restick anymore. Yeah. And everything kind of, all those emotions I never knew how to deal with really became to just spill out uncontrollably to the point where I reached a moment in my life where I was like, I'm doing all the Christian things and I'm doing them pretty well, and I feel terrible to the point of like, I almost would rather die. Like if I can't figure I'm going to walk away from the faith or die like that in my mind at the time, that was like the most logical thing. And so at the time I went on a 3-week retreat, which was like an isolated retreat up in Washington, where I spent 3 weeks alone on an island in a cabin with just me and Jesus and a Bible and my journal. And I would meet with like a spiritual director once a day. And one of the first things he said to me was, well, your pain is a gift. It will lead you to hope, but you can't get to hope without going through the pain. And then I would go back to my cabin for the next, 15 hours and like let the feelings come up, all the ones that were just kind of pressed down there or told they weren't okay. The rage came, the grief came, then, all of it. And so, and that was this profound experience for me. Truly supernatural, actually, of like, that's where I discovered Jesus. Like, it's through actually becoming real, like being real, which emotions are your heart. They're connected there. And so I think that's probably the light version of like how I really came in contact of integrating emotions into like my life and becoming whole.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
It's a powerful piece. And I think so many relate. I relate as well. Just not knowing what to do with the harder emotions. I'm like really fascinated by this 3-week retreat place. I'm like, where is that? I need to go.
I'll send you information. It's great.
You had me at cabin in the woods. I mean, that's my spot too.
Yeah, we actually have a little small retreat place out here in Sherwood, Oregon, and we use with our leaders. Yeah. And that is such profound place to do silence and solitude. We're coaching them on a level one day, maybe two, that we can get them to slow down and be start to listen. But to go for 3 weeks is a profound gift. It sounds like it's part of your training as well in soul care. But I think that's really why we stay busy, right? Like we stay busy because when we slow down, we start to really feel and get real with what we're holding.
And Julie, you talk about it, how this in the home, there were emotions that were acceptable and emotions that were not acceptable that you had to suppress or that you had no room for. When we go into our places of our faith community, our churches, we kind of in many cases play that out there as well in church culture. How are you working to help church culture, if you will? Leaders and churches and family systems of faith families be able to integrate the emotional colors and palette that God gave us and into a proper theology, right? About that. Talk to us a little bit about some of that that you're doing and in your book.
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest falsehoods of emotions, especially in the church, is that it's sinful, right? So it's like, if I am sad, somehow that means I'm not trusting God. Or if I'm angry, somehow I'm not forgiving. And I think there's a danger when we tie those together. Like, if I feel something, it means I lack faith. And I think where we see this is you look at all of Scripture, right? You look at so many of the biblical heroes of the Bible and how deeply they experienced feelings, right? From Job, right? Like, he cried out in anger. He was angry at God. Where are you? Why are you hiding your face from me? Where are you? And you look at David in the Psalms in his greatest place of like sin and betrayal and agony and abandonment. It's like he's crying out to, that is his prayer. You know, you look in the New Testament, right? You even look at Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane throughout Scripture, throughout his life on earth. It's like he is engaging with not just other people's feelings, their heart, but he's engaging with his own as a way actually of connection. Like, that heart, that becomes the bridge to connection with other people and with his Father. So yeah, I think integrating, right? There's probably been a disorder of what emotions are. And I think it comes from culture. And I think it comes from different places in the church and leadership. But it's like, how do we get that back to a place where it's like, actually, emotions are part of your humanity. Mm-hmm. And if you're not dealing with them, like, you are not fully living out the grace and the beauty of the Christian life, what God has for you.
Yeah, it means that we haven't really turned the light fully on, right? Living with, like, you, if you're going to feel joy and hope, then yes, your spiritual director was right. Like, you've got to go through the pain, as in Jesus, right? Going through the suffering to the resurrection piece. And so we like the good parts, but we want to throw out the parts that we're like, I'll pass on that one. Especially certain family cultures, maybe wiring types too. Some of us here are maybe more playful and like to stay on the surface. Yeah.
Others more cognitive.
Yeah, more cognitive.
And yeah.
But I think the thing, you know, when God says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind and your strength, we can hold that. And then we have these other passages like the heart is deceitful above all else in Jeremiah, or do not be anxious, right? And we focus on the do not.
Fear not.
Yeah. Speak to that piece where it gets confusing for people, because they're like, okay, I'm supposed to bring God my heart. And he even models being attuned to emotion. And also there's these passages that I read that tell me, you know, if to rejoice always. And so we take that kind of literally sometimes.
Yeah, it's interesting because I can totally relate. You know, I think there's even I think it's in Philippians, but like, forget the former things, do not dwell on the past. You know, see, I'm doing it. So it's like, okay, I can't look backwards. I can't look at my story. I can only look forwards. And it's like, I think what the problem is we can make it so black and white. Like, just, these commands are true, right? It's like, oh, don't be afraid. I'm with you always, right? And so it's, I kind of really equate it to even like parenting and children. It's like, there has to be truth connected to the invitation to come, right? I love you, right? They make a mistake. I love you. And I want you to tell me what really happened. Like, those truths almost become like this invitation of safety from God. Like, don't be anxious. Like, I got you. Okay. Well, you got me. Now, like, what you invite Jesus is to share about the reality of, like, yeah, I can also trust that you are safe and good. And, right, I love that. And feels so important. And I'm still struggling here, God.
Yeah.
I love that piece. So it's really the tone of which we read those scriptures, through the lens of grace and relationship, of the I always say it like this. Oh, honey, don't be anxious.
Yeah. That's
but how he says that because he knows we're anxious, right? Like he's like, let's talk about it. And then he says, present your prayers and your requests. And he's like, talk to me.
And Julie, you do a great job at an audio commentary, speaking this way, the scriptures and helping people to understand it. Because just with your tone and body language, it reframes those in the way in which I think the heart of God intended for the authors to pen. It's great.
Yeah. I love it. Now, talk about the liturgy. So your book is so special because you're not just talking about emotions. Like, you go through all of the emotions. So talk about maybe the flow of the book for those that don't know, and then why, and then the liturgy that you're providing in each.
Sure. Well, I think you named it a little bit earlier when we were talking, but we're at such a fast pace in life. And I think we're actually, like, so scared to slow down. Right. It's like, that's why we're in soccer practice and in eight sports and after school program. Like really, I think there is a deep fear to slow down because we're actually really terrified to see what would happen if we did. And so when I pitched to my publisher a book on feelings, they were like, I like the idea, but I don't know how people will gravitate towards it because there's such a lack of language for feelings. Right? Most people can name a few. They can say, I'm sad, I'm anxious, or I'm frustrated. Those are pretty common ones people can attach to. But there are, like in the book, there's 75, and there's way more that I didn't even write about, but 75. And there's something so important about naming exactly the feeling you feel. So, like a lot of people will say, I feel stressed, but you ask a few more questions and it's like, oh, you're not stressed. Like what you're actually feeling is discouraged. And it's like, and it totally reshapes how they experience that. So kind of how I wrote out the book was I did a language for feeling. So I kind of just pulled kind of right from my journals of when I've experienced, a sense of disgust, right? It's like, okay, I have that. I put a story to that feeling. And then I do to help people kind of like connect to it. I really wanted people to start to identify their temptation with the feeling. You can either move to power or powerlessness. Those are really common. And most people know exactly what they do, right? It's like, I get busy, I work harder, I try harder, or I give up and move to kind of self-pity. Those are what we do. And what I really wanted to do is invite people to prayer, because that is like where intimacy with God is really found, is in the middle of that experience, in the middle of the emotion. And so writing liturgy, 75, one for every feeling, just felt like what I really want, where the transformation happens. It's not that Jesus automatically takes your anxiety away. It's like the transformation happens as we are not alone in it. And so inviting people into to pray that feeling was my hope, was that they would, gosh, grow in greater intimacy and relationship with God. And so, yeah, that's kind of the layout of the book, like the language, the feeling, a liturgy for the feeling, and then scripture they can turn to that could give them some more hope with what they're experiencing. But kind of to tag on to the end, it's like, you know, you go to the doctor if you're not feeling good, right? We can do this with our bodies. We're fine with this, right? Something feels off. I feel like I don't feel good. You go and you like, they're going to ask you questions, right? They're going to ask you, oh, how's this? How's this? How's this? You do an inventory. And it's like, okay, you can have runny nose, watery eyes, sore throat. And it's like, well, that could be allergies or it could be a cold or the beginning of a flu, right? But if you don't actually name what it is, you're not going to get the right medicine. And so it's like, if you don't really name what that feeling is accurately, oh, that's not anxiety. What you're actually feeling is like, frustration or loneliness or longing, then you're not going to be able to get kind of the right medicine that will help you move towards healing and wholeness.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. Yeah, I'm hearing you just say how important it is to be attuned to with God, because he knows what's going on in your heart, mind, soul, body or in your relationships. You know, that connects to our message of integrity. That's, you know, what that is. And to do this with him. And I love the way that you're describing this as an invitation. You know, it's a turn towards, it's a connection with God, with the body that he made, and with others. Mm-hmm. You guys have five kids. You're raising five kiddos. First of all, what are the age range?
Yeah, so my oldest is 18 and my youngest is 8. So we just launched the first to college.
Yeah, okay.
That's awful.
Lots of feels, I know.
Lots of feelings.
We did it too. We're right there with you. So with these kids, with the practice that you guys have implemented in this experience and the passion that you have for emotions, how did you help your children connect to a healthy sense of their emotions in relationship with God and with one another and with themselves in their own bodies? What were some of those things that you really implemented with them, and has it paid off for them?
Well, we'll find out. Ask me in 10 years. I think, you know, going into parenting, and maybe I'm sure you've been married just about the similar amount of time, about 20 years around there, you two.
Yeah.
We're 25. Yeah. We had kiddos a little later.
Off to a good start.
You were babies when you got married. Oh my goodness. Well, it's like, I think one thing that has really, really helped us, and one thing that we are always striving towards, my husband and myself, is working through our own story. I think that has helped us connect to our kids' hearts the most, because in doing so, it helps us. Like, I mean, I think for me, so people have different negative emotions, right? Some people, like, oh, they, for the love of God, they never want to be sad. It's like sadness is like death, you know? I'm fine with sadness, but anger is like really scary for me, you know? And I think that goes into like the way I was raised. There was just a lot of anger and big chaos. And so for me, anger was always like bad. No, never. Like, get rid of it as soon as possible. Like, if you feel anger, like, okay, go eat food, right? Or go do something happy, or go hang out with people, you know? And I think when I had kids, it was like, oh my gosh, I felt so much rage, right? Over really dumb things, right? Spilling milk, like not, you know, them getting into the car slowly or getting out of the car slow, you know, just like things that don't match. Like, I get really angry about really small things. So it was disproportionate. And I think it was a really, such a journey for me of like, oh, I think it's not about the milk or the shoes. I think it's really because it's touching something in me where I've not let anger have its way. You know, like, there's actually something safe and very good about anger, even though my experience was really negative. And so I think when I think about parenting, like, for me to really engage with my kids at the heart level, like, I actually have to be connected to my own heart. Because if they're anxious, I don't want to deal with it, because it means I have to deal with my own anxiety, right? It means I actually have to slow down. And that's the thing I don't want to do, because that's, then everything comes up. And so the more I am attentive to my own soul and story, gosh, I think that's when I'm the best parent. But that's not really saying a lot, just so you know. It's just I'm better than I normally am. But
yeah, no, but you're spot on. I think
much respect.
Probably the last thing parents often think. They're like, give me a tip or a trick, right? Like something you're going to do. And you go, actually, the best is when you really do your inner work of knowing how your story's impacted you, grieving the process. And then really being, it really does. I have a cheesy saying, you got to feel it to heal it. But that comes from my 20 plus years of working in trauma therapy with high functioning leaders to say, until we really actually move through the emotions and get real with what's under that anger, it really does haunt us. It can show up in weird leaks in weird ways.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, I think let's go with cheesy here if we want to, but it's like, I remember someone told me this once of like, your parents' undealt with pain becomes your pain. And I think my parents didn't deal with a lot of pain, so it became my pain. And I'm like, it sucked right? Yeah. It's like, not only do I deal with mine, I also have to deal with the stuff my dad and my mom didn't deal with. Mm-hmm. And their parents didn't deal with. Like, it's so generational. And it's like, I am so committed, although I fail often, to not pass on my pain to my kids. They are going to have a hard enough life without having to deal with my anxiety or my anger, you know? So
much respect for that. So relate to that in our stories.
Really?
You know, trauma begets trauma, and it is such a noble pursuit. I mean, and thank God for his help and his grace and his presence in our lives to help us to keep at it, right? It's not like we arrive. It's like we're dealing with this and having to, I mean, to do the hard work, we call it, to get our trauma baggage down, to carry on size. And I don't know that God ever takes it away all the way, because lest we start thinking that we don't need him. Mm-hmm. He loves us too much to let that happen, but we got to stay on it. And I'm sure that through the intention, through the prayer, through the desperation, the help, the practical helps that we have been doing in our journeys, that, God willing, our kids will not have to carry that additional load, right? And so we're right there with you. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you opened the door to talk about anger and how scary that was for you. And I think, you know, as I'm thinking about the things I processed in this trauma-informed guide to healing church hurts is really a process of looking at our emotions and the way that our families of origin and our church culture who love Jesus, your parents love the Lord, they were doing beautiful things for the Lord, and yet there were these dynamics that were hard and unhealthy. Talk about the places you had to go in order to really deal with anger, because it was so scary. I think a lot of people listening are like, yeah, that sounds great for you guys, but I'm not sure I really want to go there. And I'm still really mad at God, by the way. So to invite God into this process makes me even mad.
I think two things come up for me. The first one is that the thing with anger, it has to come out, right? So I spent a lot of time just screaming. And that sounds like, I know that can sound like weird or crazy, but it's like, and I think maybe I should say this clearly, is it's not screaming at a person, right? Because that's how anger is going to come. It's going to come out sideways if you don't get it out the right way, right? So it's like, oh, I would, for a while, I would be in my car, just like, let it out. Because it's such a physical rage that it's like, if I don't get it out here, it's going to come out on one of my kids. And like, I would rather it come out in the right way, which is out of you, than out on a person. And so, man, it took a lot of like, I hope no one can see me on the freeway or think I'm crazy. But it was like, I knew it. And there was like, I mean, pretty instantaneously, when you let out that guttural scream, there is a sense of freedom. It does something inside of you. So I would say with anger, it's like, get it out, right? Like in the right places, you know? I think the other part when it comes to the right, like, yeah, I grew up in the church and I grew up in a Christian home. And there were a lot of things that weren't good about my home that was really painful. And there were it was a good church, but you know, a lot of unfortunate things happened. And I think one thing that I'm coming to with those spaces is like, there's a difference between hurt and harm. And I think that's really important to distinguish as you're processing your experience, especially in the church, right? Is this hurt? Like, did your feelings get hurt, or were you really harmed? And there, I think those lead to some different paths for you. But especially Henry Nouwen talks about this so beautifully in his book, Spiritual Direction. But we have to come to a place where we can forgive people for not being God. And I think there's like that forgiveness is a really important part of the journey, especially in a Christian home that had a lot of chaos, or in a church that where you were hurt or harmed, but there has to come a place of like a forgiveness, right? We don't want to jump the gun and forgive and just never process the emotional forgiveness part of it. But I think for me, with the church and with my family, like forgiveness has been what has allowed me to stay in relationship with my parents and to stay in relationship with the church, where I like have a deep, still a deep love for the church, even though my husband's a pastor. And it's like, ooh, there are some really painful, ugly, hard, gruesome things about being on church staff. I mean, he just equated it the other day of like church staff is like the liver, you know, it digests all the junky stuff out so that the good nutrients can go to the body, you know? So yeah, I think, but part of that is like, oh, I can forgive, well, with the Lord's help and in time and like the heart processing of it, like I'm going to forgive that person because yeah, they're not God. Mm-hmm. And maybe in a way I've expected them to be God for me or for people.
Yeah, I love Henry now, and he's so poignant in the ways he says it. I think you're saying the very key thing, which is part of the steps in the book, is just really leading people through that process, that forgiveness, yes, there's a grieving process until. And so you've got to honor the emotions, giving them a chance to be heard. And that's going to move you closer to that place where you can really make the choice. Mm-hmm. And I love the clarification between hurt and harm. And I might even call it church hurt versus church abuse, you know, abuse, spiritual abuse. Mm-hmm. And those are very different. Yeah. And we keep hurting each other just because we're human beings and we're not God, right? And so if you're going to hang out with other people, you're going to keep getting hurt at times. So knowing how to do this well is important.
If you're hurt, it's not always a result of sin. Mm. It's not always a result that a pastor or a leader did sinned against you. Sometimes it is, absolutely. But sometimes they did something that was actually according to scripture and actually correct, but you just didn't like it.
Fair.
And so I think like naming those things like you are, like that's such a gift to people to help reorient where their anger goes.
Yeah.
And where their pain goes.
I have another off-grid question, but did you have one?
No, go for it.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying not to hog. This is the hard thing when you have to co-host.
Yeah, we roll.
Okay. So you talked a little bit about your cultural upbringing and that playing a role. Now, here's something I hear in my clients that, again, I grew up in a Syrian-Lebanese cultural backdrop. And so people might not assume that by the way I look. But now people are like, oh, I see it.
That's funny.
So it played a huge role in how I view myself as a woman and relational dynamics and around emotions. There were a lot of places, but I process with my clients of different backdrops culturally, and some have wrestled with this idea that culturally emotions have a different place and they are followers of Jesus. So we're wrestling with what the Bible has to say about emotions versus what our culture has to say. Speak to that for yourself, because we want to honor our cultures and our upbringings. But there are certain cultures that really don't see value in emotions, period.
Yeah.
And so how do we integrate that into, and how did you do that even personally in your own journey?
Yeah. I think every culture, and I would even make this more individualistic, it's a response reaction. Right. So in Asian culture, right, there's a lot of, it's very shame based. But what's at the core of shame, right? The core of shame is saying that something's wrong with you. And so you have to cover that up with something else to be good. And so I think across cultures, across ages, across socioeconomic, there's something in here that we're running away from. And cover, if it's guilt, if it's shame, if it's, if it's like high performance cultures, it's like, what is at the heart of it? And I think when you look at scripture, it's like, oh, Jesus is always after the heart, always. And so it's very hard to untangle, though. I want to like offer a lot of gentleness and grace there. Like, I get it. Like, in many cultures, it's like, why would we ever talk about the bad thing? Like the bad thing that happened, right? I think there's every story has, oh, the bad thing that happened. Like, why would you do that? And so because it's super painful. It is painful. And so there has to be a lot of, I think the work that you're doing is amazing because it's a lot of untangling that part of it. Like you can still hold true to your culture and to like some of those traditions that are in your family. But there's also some things where it's like, you look at Luke, I think it's 10, where it's like probably one of the most, I could be getting that wrong. It is Luke, but it's like, oh, if you want to follow me, you have to hate your mother. You have to hate father. You have to hate your brother. Take up your cross and follow me. Whoa, like we got to reckon with that. Like, what is Jesus really saying? It's like, oh, like what is the most important? It's not really, he's not really saying like, go hate them. No. He's saying like, hate that dynamic that you have built with your father, that you need his approval and acceptance more than Jesus or your brother, that you need that friendship more than you need Jesus. And actually when you break that bond, even of the unhealthy cultural ones, actually what it sets you up to do is love your father and your brother better and more holistically.
Yeah, beautiful.
Well said.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the way in which you are connecting, helping others connect to the heart of God and the emotions that he showed on earth, that he birthed in us as humans, as image bearers, to reconnect to him through pain and know that he's with us in that. I mean, that is so hopeful and true. And so many people, maybe you're in the audience today and you're listening to this and you just needed that reminder. My gosh, God is with me. He hasn't abandoned me in the hopelessness, in the shame, in the anger, the rage, the anxiety, the fear, fill in the blank, the depression. He's with you. Yes, he is. Yeah. Yes, he is. And so thank you so much, and Julie, for reminding us of this today, embodying that, living that, and staying attuned to it. This is, we wish that more and more leaders in and outside the church that identify as followers of Jesus become even more comfortable accepting, integrating these truths so that they aren't white knuckling their role. As if God cares about them and their image, you know, he cares about them. He cares and sees them. And so if you're out there today and you feel like you're white knuckling your role as a pastor, as a counselor, as a spiritual director, as a parent, as a spouse, realize that God wants to open your hand and help you. He's with you. And that your emotions that leak are telling you something. They're a message, they're information that are telling you to attune to him, attune to the body that he made. He's calling you into deeper waters of freedom and of actual help and healing. And that is worth the journey, as hard as it is. It's worth it.
Well, and Julie, why don't you, I mean, Jeff just left us with a great word of encouragement, but I want to give you a chance to, if there's anything left unsaid that you want to say before we close today.
Yeah, I think it's just like, I think the journey of allowing yourself to feel your feelings, not just think them, but to like feel them, I think it requires so much courage. It takes courage, right? Because it's like those feelings are connected to some really hurt, some painful places, maybe some lies that you've believed for a long time about yourself. And so I think the encouragement I'd offer is like, oh, that thing that you're running from or that bad thing that happened, that thing that feels confusing or chaotic still when you think about your story, like just remember that Jesus is already there. He's inviting you and sometimes using these feelings as a way to get your attention to come look at this thing, you know, come look at this thing of pain or harm or hurt and allow God to heal it, but it does take courage. And so take courage.
Yeah. does take courage.
Take heart.
A lot of grace.
Take heart. I've overcome the world.
So good. And I think you said it earlier, and I just want to end with this really key, that it's not the emotions that are sinful or bad, that all the emotions, and you only named 75 in your book, but there's a lot. I think I have a whole list as well in the back of the book. I just didn't count how many I added in there. But it's what we do with them that becomes the outfall of sin or harm or hurting others on ourselves, versus bringing that before God and safe people to help us process that. And your book just does a beautiful job of helping us do that. So where can people find your book, Feel, a collection of liturgies offering hope for every complicated emotion?
Yeah, you can. The main place is Amazon, and you'll probably get the best deal on Amazon. So I always send people there.
Yeah. And then how can they find you if they want to lean into more of your work?
Yeah, always on Instagram. I'm a little lazy on Instagram right now, but I will keep showing up there every once in a while. And my website is just angeliepascal.com, and you can learn more about me there.
So good to be with you. And if you're listening and this has really struck a chord with you, we're here for you. We have professional counselors. We have executive coaches. We all are working through the feels with you on any level and wherever you want to start. So we're here. Go to livingwholehearted.com where you can find more of our resources. And until the next time, continue growing in your walk with God and with others and becoming the leader that you would follow. Thank you for being with us today.
Hi, I'm Rhonda Began, one of the executive leadership coaches at Living Wholehearted. And I love what I do as a coach, especially in our cohort setting. That's why I'm excited to tell you that we are starting a 2-year women's executive leadership cohort in April of this year. And I don't want you to miss out. You might think as a leader, there's no way I can take 2 years to do anything. But we designed our cohort specifically to be doable for the high-level leader. Through one-on-one coaching that is easy to schedule, to once-a-month virtual group coaching, and then 4 amazing retreats at our Living Wholehearted Lodge and Retreat in beautiful Sherwood, Oregon, in the heart of wine country. We will look at who you are and how your story matters. We'll look at how you're wired and why it's important to be who you are. And then we'll look at how you have the potential to impact not just your leadership, but your family, your community, and your world. Hope you join us.